Hi, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Anna. And we're business partners, mums, and we're also mates.
Yes, we are. But we are also chefs, taxi drivers, band-aid appliers. The list goes on. So we know that the juggle is real.
We're here to chat with you about how to find joy in the juggle, as well as bringing you all kinds of connected conversations with inspiring people who have stories of their own to tell and insight to share about how to set your soul on fire.
Also, we might throw in a swear word or some cheeky context, so perhaps if little ones are around, it's best to listen with AirPods in.
So you're... we... how do you wrap up an intro?
Well, hello, hello, and welcome back. Welcome to another episode of The Work Wives. Hello, Anna.
Hi, Sarah. We're back again. Hi, listener. How's your week been? Oh, great. That's really good to hear.
Hey, thank you to all of our new listeners. We have had a little bit of a spike, and that makes me so excited. So welcome. We hope that you're having fun. We've got a beautiful community, and some of our amazing new listeners have also jumped in our inbox as well and have offered their services or their knowledge for interviews. So please jump on in. The more the merrier, and we're going to be getting through some really cracking hot interviews in the next few weeks.
Speaking of interviews, we had promised our lovely listener that this episode would be an interview with us and the amazing Dr. Gina Cleo,
yes,
who's a habit specialist.
Now, Anna has sabotaged that interview because Gina and I became best friends during the interview, and Anna's trying everything that she can do to try and halt that relationship from blossoming.
Yeah, true. So in actuality, what has happened is, for anyone who's been listening to us regularly, you will know that this podcast, in as far as timing and organization goes, is a little bit of a hot dog's breakfast. So
I was going to say a shit storm. So yeah. Collaboration of the two. We really have had no organization. And the good news is that we're actually becoming somewhat structured.
That's one of our New Year's resolutions and New Year's implementation practices, is getting more structure in our lives. And one of them is with this podcast. So yeah, traditionally we've just started a season on a random date and ended it on a random date. And then we stop over Christmas and then we do one a week and then three a week. And anyway, we have got it down to a fine art now that we're bringing some beautiful interviews in. So what's our new routine going to be moving forward from here, Sarah?
Hot diggity dog, we do have a routine and we actually have a plan in place. So hold on to your bloomers, people. What we're actually going to do each Tuesday, give or take, I mean, don't hold us down if it's not exactly regimented, but every Tuesday we are going to hope to bring you a beautiful guest, someone with a story to tell or some insight to give. And that's going to roll out on a Tuesday. And then on a Friday, we're going to have a second podcast. And generally that podcast will be you and I just chewing off each other's shoes.
That one, I think, will cover a lot of what's going on in our lives, our business, and maybe also reflecting on what we've learned from our interviews with other women.
I love that. We've really been implementing some really good little nuggets of gold from each of the guests that we've had so far. And that's been really, really liberating. So hopefully if you've been listening along too, that you have been learning some things. We've been tagged quite a bit lately in our inbox from people who have been buying books or doing their own life lists, or, you know, just doing little things that they got inspired from this podcast. So please keep tagging us. And it's really nice to know that we're inspiring you for some small but really important changes.
Amazing. So this episode, as it's a Friday, we're going to just have a chat with each other and we'll save our interviews until Tuesday. So our first one will be obviously Dr. Gina Cleo on Tuesday.
My new bestie.
Yeah. Today we decided that we would finally do what we had been promising you and give an update on my little ray of sunshine, Emmett.
Your little ray of sunshine and one of my most favorite people in the world, little M-Dog.
And he's getting even more and more incredible. I know I don't like to be one of those parents, it's like, my child is so amazing. But seriously, this kid.
Be one of those parents.
This kid is something else. He's pretty cool. And he's just now started to get into, he's super affectionate and his hugs, like he'll wrap his arms around your neck and squeeze tight. And he just gets right in your face with this big smile and he drools all over you, which is not so great.
I was going to say truly because he's a very wet mouth.
He's a very wet kid. Yeah.
Very sloppy hug.
Yeah, it's a sloppy hug.
Now, if you're listening for the first time and wondering why we favor one of our children out of the five that we have collectively, we'll give you a little bit of insight on Emmett. It was this time last year where we actually turned on the microphones on this podcast and Anna revealed that her 18-month-old at the time wasn't developing as normally as he probably should in relationship to any of the other little 18-month-old buddies that he had. So it's really weird to believe that that was a year ago.
I know. It doesn't seem like that long ago. In some ways, like we were talking earlier, in some ways it seems longer, in some ways it seems really short, but because his timeline is so different to the regular kid, I've kind of lost perspective of time with him. It just nothing kind of goes along the expected timeline. So I've just thrown that out the window.
It has gone fast. It feels like a very small time ago that we did sit down and just start vocalizing your experience with Emmett. But in saying that, I'm sure if you look at your calendar over the last year and the amount of appointments and therapies and visits to specialists and purchasing of special shoes and little wheelchairs and you name it, that probably feels like a world ago and like five times, a lifetime of what's happened.
Interestingly, I'm finding that with everywhere, anytime like over Christmas and New Year's, we're away from everyone. And when we came back, there were so many comments from people going, he's moved so far forward. And people who see him at a greater distance in time to when I do can see the bigger leaps forward than I can.
I haven't seen him for a while in person, so it'll be interesting when I do catch up with him whether I can notice. So this time last year, Emmett was actually a little bald-headed baby. He actually looked like a baby. And if you're listening, the reason Anna actually decided to go and see, first of all, a pediatrician was because she was actually leading into Christmas and realized that her son that was more than 12 months old wasn't even crawling yet. And to kind of stop the dinner time conversation of what's wrong with your kid, she thought she'd just go pop out to the pediatrician, get the all clear and say, oh, he's just a little bit delayed. You know, he's just lazy little shit having a good life. But boy, oh boy, haven't things changed. In 12 months, he didn't have a blade of hair on his head. And now he's got like a little, he's like a little noodle top. He's got adorable little blonde curls just going every which way direction. And at the time you were handling it okay as well because you were studying, your eldest son was going to school. Emmett was so tiny and still looked like a baby. So you could just bounce him off your hip and he did look like probably an 8 or 9 month old baby. How have things changed for you now that he's actually 2.5? He's got a head full of hair. He's very, very long. So how is that going for you 12 months down the track?
So now if somebody says, if I'm holding him on my hip or feeding him a meal or whatever, and someone says, oh, how old is he? And I say 2, there's a real change in their expression. And I've had to actively say, oh, he's got something called global developmental delay. And then I'll get, oh, because you said 2 and I thought, oh. And so now there's an obvious, I used to be able to get away with it because he looked like a big oversized baby. Can't get away with it anymore. And there are a lot of, you know, everyone, the first thing they see is his beautiful smile, but then they'll see him squinting or stimming. And now there's kind of that, they're not quite sure whether they should say something. There's that awkwardness of,
right,
something different here. And I don't know whether this person's comfortable talking about this. And sometimes I don't know whether whether the person who's thinking that is comfortable talking about it. So there's that whole unwritten conversation that happens when someone sees that this child is different and neither party knows whether the other party is comfortable bringing it up.
So let's talk about what's happened in 12 months. 12 months ago, Emmett was definitely not eating solids. He was smashing back the good stuff that you were mashing up. How is he eating?
His eating is probably the only thing that hasn't moved too far forward. So he does eat some soft, like muffin type foods. He's got, bless her heart, if we ever get so bloody famous that Annabelle Carmel can hear what we're saying, please, I will be a spokesperson for you all day long, because Annabelle Carmel children's meals, I don't know what it is about them, but kids eat them all day long. They're in the freezer section of just Coles and Woolies, but they're a great texture and consistency for Emmett. So anyone who's familiar with those meals, that's the kind of texture and consistency that Emmett can eat at the moment.
Well, I'm glad for Emmett's sake that you are investing in Annabelle's meals, because I've been to your house before and you've just chucked whatever is in the fridge in that kid's dinner, including like chili, garlic, onion. And because of his global developmental delay, he actually likes really high stimulus. So he likes a packed punch of flavor, or when I play with him and I tickle him hard because he actually likes that. But yeah, I did feel very, very sorry for him and the smells of his nappies, because what you chucked in that kid's meals, that there would be a smell that would outlast religion.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
okay.
So the feeding is not, it's back and forth, back and forth.
So you're still feeding him. He's not able to feed himself at this stage.
No, he's never grabbed food and put it in his mouth. A lot of his problem is his motor function and his motor planning. And I was having this conversation just the other day with the speech therapist, because I said, well, he understand, like he's cognitively, he's ahead of where he is physically. And I said, it's interesting because I'll say to him, do you want this or this? And he'll nod his head or shake his head. So he knows what I'm asking him and he knows how to answer it, but he's just not using words. And I said to her, I can't wrap my head around that. Like, there's a lot that these interventionists are very familiar with, but I am just learning and I can't wrap my head around the fact that this kid knows he can make sounds and he can nod yes or no. So why can't he just say yes or no? And she said, a lot of people don't realize that speaking is almost exclusively a very advanced motor function. You need to know how to push out the air at the right rate and move your tongue at the same time and your lips at the same time. So it's not so much the executive functioning cognitively, it's actually a big motor skill, and it's a very fine motor skill.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I remember when you told me about exactly what it takes to eat food. That blew me away, but I hadn't thought about eating either. He's also got very poor muscle tone. So perhaps, you know, just moving your throat, your tongue, your lips as well is something that is just not developed for him yet. Have you thought about life with him being nonverbal, or is that something that you in your heart of hearts or in your mind are telling yourself it's just delay, it will come on?
I'm assuming that it's just delay, because a lot of kids who are nonverbal won't vocalize anything. So he can vocalize and he babbles a little bit. It's just pretty much just da 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 and na 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 na. So he hasn't moved past there. But the fact that he's capable and able and willing to do that often shows that there is a capacity to be able to speak eventually. That being said, the speech pathologist is working with him at the moment to go down the alternative communication routes. So we're looking at two different options. She's working in combination with the OT because the speaking is very much a motor function, right? They're working together to find out what's the best mode of communicating with him. One of the options is she had got these buttons, which if you follow me on Instagram, you'll be able to see him using this button to say yes for more food. But his problem is his sensory and his hands. He doesn't like to use his hands. And we're noticing that if he wants something, he will very much visually look towards it. And if he doesn't want something, he'll turn away. He'll either turn his face or his whole body away. And so we're actually going down visual tracking devices. So we start very, very basically, where we have a piece of paper with a hole in the middle and four options on the piece of paper. And you stick your face in the middle of the hole to see, and you ask him a question, and where he looks, like there's pictures, four pictures, like yes, no, more, or finished, or whatever it is. Or maybe if it's
Wow.
food, it's like a banana, an apple, a pear, you know, there's four different options. You ask him the question, you look through the middle, and then you look to where he's looking and you answer it when he looks to what it is that he wants. So
that's fascinating.
Yeah. And then once they get used to that, they can go down this hole. They have these incredible like iPad things that you can look at something on the screen and it speaks for you. So it gets quite complex and we don't know whether he'll end up using that or not, but for the meantime, he will need some way of communicating that is not speaking. And as we've tried Auslan with him and he's not using his hands, that might work for him with receptive language, like what he can take in, but it's not going to work with how he communicates to other people. He will not sign to anyone.
It's fascinating, isn't it? And simple things like iPads and technology, how much that would have helped parents in the last few years who have children with similar disabilities as Emmett. It's absolutely groundbreaking.
It is fascinating. I'm learning so much.
All right. So a year ago, he was not moving at all. So a child often, I think we laughed at the same age. My niece was the same age as Emmett. And even before she was 12 months, she was smashing back her own meals. She was sucking the meat off a lamb chop, running around. So let's talk about his mobility. He does have very poor muscle development. He's got these tiny little skinny legs. How is he going? So last time we did a little bit of an Emmett update, there was definitely no walking, there was no crawling, and very little movement from him.
Well, you'll be pleased to know that he is now a full-blown crawler.
Yay!
Yeah, so it started with him moving around on his elbows and dragging his little flaily legs behind him. And then he brought his knees up underneath him and that was really cute because his bum would be really high in the air because he was still on his elbows, but and he'd crawl around that way. And it's hilarious because now if he wants to get somewhere very quickly, he'll revert to that. As you know, with
yes,
kids when they're learning to crawl, they go back down to what they're used to. And so it's hilarious to see his little bum up in the air as he's like running in his little crawly way to get to something. But he has started using his hands now to crawl along. It is like watching a movie in slow motion, but it's also kind of nice because I get the firsts more than once. Like he'll do something once and then you won't see it again for another couple of months. And so when he does it again, it's like a first all over again. So I'm getting to enjoy the firsts with him probably more than other kids.
I think anyone who has a child, or if you're an auntie or an uncle, or you know, have a friend with a baby, that first year goes really, really quick, the milestones.
It does. And it's like once they're doing it, they're doing it. That's it. They're done. They're doing it.
Next.
And there's no real process of like seeing them actually learning bit by bit how to do it. So he can crawl, he can pull himself up onto the couch now. As far as walking goes, we're getting a walker for him that straps to him and allows him to move around so that when he does get tired, he can rest on it. How long it actually takes him to walk, we don't know.
Look, if someone had told you 18 months ago that you were going to be getting a wheelchair for your son, it would have been very confronting. But because I think you've been through so much in the last 12 months, it's just a natural progression, right?
It is. But there's also this weird thing of, for the longest time, I was saying to people, I feel like I have Munchausen syndrome by proxy because it feels like, what's the big deal? You know, we're getting him like walkers and things that strap to him. And I kept looking at him and thinking, but there's nothing obvious about what's going on with him. And okay, he's not walking yet, but we'll do all of this stuff. And then like next week he'll start walking and he'll start talking. And I was telling someone, one of our beautiful friends, Roxy, the other day about that and saying, I feel like I've got Munchausen's. And she said, no, it's not Munchausen's you feel like you have. You've got imposter syndrome. Like you think that you don't deserve to be seeking help for him because he doesn't look like he's got an issue.
I think you're also not a natural born victim. There's a lot of people out there that do love to put their hand up and ask for help, and you're very resilient. So I think that there's also, for you, there's always an answer to the problem. Okay, this is a problem. Now get on with it. And you've had to really learn patience over the last 12 months because you haven't had a effective proper diagnoses. Essentially, at the moment, Emmett is operating under global developmental delay, but anybody out there with a child with a disability will know that that's often the case. And then a diagnosis often will transpire as they age a little and some of the symptoms come on, or genetic testing, which you have had done, but it takes a long, long time to get the answers.
That's true. And I agree with you. I think usually, typically, I will not, my child can attest, like, and my husband, they can come to me with half their leg chopped off. And I'm like, yeah, but are the veins and arteries attached? Like, do we, you know, someone needs to really be like close to carking it before I'll take them to the emergency department. And I guess it's the same thing here, and that I'm just kind of like, it's all right. We'll just wait it out. We'll wait it out. Wait it out. And he goes to this special school with a lot of kids who have like tracheotomies and are wheelchair bound and have these quite obvious syndromic features. And then I rock up with him that looks so normal. And I think, well, you know, what's the big deal? But I do have to kind of accept that he does need help and that he's not tracking along the normal trajectory. And as they keep reiterating to me, it's a severe delay.
We have released our 2024 Bali Reset Retreats, and to celebrate, we're giving away two tickets for you and a friend to come join us.
This is a once in a leap year giveaway, so naturally the winner will be drawn on February 29th. So make the most of this leap year by investing in yourself for a change.
You could win a trip to join us for 4 days of incredible connection, restful rejuvenation, and fascinating implementation of cutting edge neurosciences that will have you kicking some serious goals in both work and in your life.
These hugely successful retreats are for anyone who feels like they're pouring from an empty cup. I know that's definitely me, and just need a freaking minute.
And a nap.
And a swim.
And a light bulb moment.
And a massage.
Oh yeah, and a dance.
And a laugh.
And another nap.
You get it.
Really, this is for anyone who wants to escape the chaos and do all of the re's, like relax,
reset,
rejuvenate,
release,
recover,
reevaluate,
reinvest,
remember,
and reclaim.
It's a retreat like nothing else you've seen in Bali, a unique approach that we call Choose Your Own Adventure that blends fascinating neurosciences and targeted life and work analysis to actually get you reaching the goals that you set for yourself, with a side of meditation and cocktails by the pool.
And if you're thinking about coming along, do it. Just go purchase a ticket now. You can still be in the draw. And if you win, we'll refund you the prize amount. You can enter the draw by visiting us at www.theworkwives.com.au or by checking out our Instagram post at the.work.wives.
We really, really want to see you there and give you a squeeze, slap you on the bum and jump in the pool with you. Consensually, of course.
All right. So last year, a year ago, Emmett was obviously about 14 months, 15 months at the time. And he was functioning at the level of a 6-month-old.
Mm.
How has that progressed 1 year later?
So now he's functioning between, his motor function is between a 9 and an 11-month-old.
The 9 to 11-month-old is probably my favorite. So it's still, it's very joyful as well, right?
It is. And he's so affectionate and beautiful and lovely and happy and smiley.
Mentally, can they give you an age of how he's processing mentally?
They think he's closer to 18 months, between 18 months and 2 years cognitively. So that's good. That being said, there's a really strong link between, actually, I read it this morning through one of the doctors that I follow on Instagram, and he said it brilliantly. Dr. Robert Melillo, he says, at one time, scientists believed that there was no relationship between the developing brain and the developing body. But now we know that this is not the case. Body and mind are codependent. The brain is dependent on the body to provide the stimulus necessary for growth, as much as the body is dependent on the brain to send out the neurotransmitters that signal the muscles to move.
Wow.
So what that means is, because he has low muscle tone, we don't know whether it's a chicken or an egg thing, but because he's got this low muscle tone, his body isn't sending messages to his brain And when you think about how you learn, you tap two things together and you realize it makes a noise. And if you tap it harder, it makes a louder noise. We get a lot of cause and effect through what we do, not thinking about what we do. We think about it because we've experienced doing it. So if he's delayed in doing it, then he's delayed in processing it and learning from it. So that's where his cognitive delay comes in.
I've noticed, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, that I believe one of the ways that you are processing this and coping so well is you actually mentally think of Emmett as the age you've been told he is developing at rather than the age that he currently is. And what I mean by that is he's almost 2.5, but you still call him the baby.
Yes.
And the fact that you still spoon feed him, you literally do treat him like a 9-month-old.
Yes.
Have you thought about that?
I have. And I do. It is very much you slip into that role of, like, I'll say to Austin all the time, I've got to put the baby down. I've got to get the baby up. I've got to give the baby a bath. And then I have to kind of stop myself, catch myself and think, well, actually, he's not a baby. He's 2.5
toddler.
Yeah.
Wondering whether that helps you cope, that you do visualize him as a 9-month-old, even, you know, the things that you do for him. Obviously, you have to do those things for him, but it's almost like in your mind, you have a 9-month-old.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. But in parts, it helps me cope. But then in other ways, it also gives me a little bit of anxiety, because if I'm treating him like a 9-month-old, then he's going to be acting like a 9-month-old. And I think a lot of kids with disabilities grow up to be a little bit delayed, and behaviorally they're delayed because they're treated like they're not able to do what they're actually capable of doing.
Yeah, their independence is taken away because you do it right for him, thinking that he's still so young.
Yes. And if you think about any normal child, if they're babied and treated like, oh, then they will be not quite as good as, like, right, say, my oldest son, who's been forced to be an adult in a lot of ways.
Mate, he wasn't even a baby.
No.
I got a letter from someone who has just started listening to the podcast. She's a friend of mine. And I want to I haven't shared this with you, but I want to see what you think about this, because I said to you from the very beginning how proud I was that you were speaking and not hiding anything, that you weren't kind of throwing the doona over what was happening in your family. If anything, you actually whipped that doona off and you exposed it in the hope, A, that it would help you cope, but second of all, you've always been like a bit of a beacon and a shining light for other people going through it, because you have voiced things happening to them that they may not have voiced themselves. It does appear to be a very common thread that anybody who has a child with a disability, particularly one that can't be identified, to kind of feel guilt and shame and to essentially cover that child because they want to protect them, and B, kind of hide away from the world because they don't know what to say. They don't know how to explain what's happening. So here is a letter that I got from a good friend of mine. And she's only just recently, we had a conversation and I realized that she actually had a child with severe global developmental delay. And I just flicked her the episode where you first talked about Emmett. And funnily enough, her and I caught up the next morning, and she'd only listened to about 10 minutes of the episode. She's, oh my gosh, I'm listening to the episode. It's amazing. You know, it's so good. I can't wait to get back in the car. So she kind of ditched me to get back to me and you to listen to the conversation. And it's really interesting, how her perception changed from being really light and, oh, this is a great episode, to the end. So I'll read you what she had to say. I have just finished listening to my first episode of The Work Wives, and I'm looking forward to many more. Your beautiful energy, authenticity, and connection comes through. So clearly, I love it. I got very, very emotional as I listened. It went from a lump in my throat that I had 10 minutes in when I saw you this morning to a full-blown emotional release as I was driving to work. It was so cathartic. I felt like Anna was telling my story and identifying my deepest thoughts and fears, but in such a beautiful and articulate way. As you know, my daughter is nearly 10, and like Emmett, our investigation started when she was 18 months old. We didn't get a diagnosis until she was 3, and at the time I was pregnant. It has taken me until very recently to openly discuss that I have a daughter with a disability. It's for fear of judgment, alienation, or worse, pity. I admire Anna for tackling this journey head on and embracing the realities of it. Listening to your podcast has inspired me on so many levels, but mostly it has given me the validation to be okay with needing extra support. It's also made me realize that my situation and my struggles are very real. Anna is super blessed to have you by her side to make the journey less lonely. Thank you both for sharing.
Oh, that is so lovely and very articulate of her actually to write it in that way.
Yeah, we've had a few conversations since and yeah, she really thinks that you are so brave because she said going back to her journey when it happened to her daughter, also finding out that she was pregnant, I guess being concerned if it's going to be passed on, whether it's going to be hereditary. Like you, it took a long time, 18 months, to actually find out exactly what was wrong with her daughter. So she kind of went undercover and she's really impressed that you are so openly speaking about your situation, but also so early on.
I think one of the really interesting things that she said there, which I resonate with, is one of the worst things that you can get that is that you don't want to share with people why it's happening is pity. And that I've never thought of that word in this context, but she's hit the nail on the head because I've spoken with a lot of other people who have their own children with disabilities and they don't want to say it because they don't want to be pitied. And I think it's a really, really relevant point for her to make because a lot of us who have gone through our lives being get on with it people and in no way are our personalities about seeking pity about anything, to have something outside of our control happening and have someone pity us for it is like, no. But then also, like I said earlier, I'm having these conversations now with people going, oh, you know, I could see when you said he's 2 years old, I kind of thought, oh, he's not really doing what 2 year old should do. Sometimes it does go into, oh, yeah. And there is a touch of pity. And my instant reaction is there's nothing sad about what's happening here. And I know that's hard for people who haven't gone through it or been imminently next to somebody who's experiencing it, but there's no pity involved here. These children with disabilities and differences, they absolutely have challenges and there are definitely challenges that we face, but there's nothing wrong with the children. There's nothing wrong with who they are as a human being, and their personalities are just as whole as anybody else. So where's the pity? Being inquisitive, being curious, absolutely. But I think that's one of the things that can grate on us is having people be like, oh, I'm so sorry for you. When it's like, why are you sorry that this is my child? Don't tell me sorry. I'm lucky to have this child.
As your friend, I get defensive because Emmett is not someone you should show pity to. If anything, he brings more joy and more light and more flavor than any other child I've ever met. Like it's not because of his disability that I have a soft spot for him. It's the way that he connects when he smiles and the way that his whole body lights up when he sees you. And he glistens through his eyes, through his teeth, through his little hands that clench when he gets excited. It actually hurts me that someone would look at Emmett, you know, or another child and feel pity, because that is the last thing he has brought. Nothing to be pitiful about. He's brought just absolute sunshine.
And I guess being able to experience a child with these challenges firsthand for you and I is that we recognize that it's a part of who he is. It's not all of who, it's not him. That's not him. His personality has nothing to do with his motor delays. His personality is who he is as a person, and he happens to have these challenges alongside that. So I guess when someone pities you for having this child, they're rejecting the whole of the child, when really I understand having sympathy and empathy for dealing with the challenges associated with whatever the disability is, but that's an aside as to who this child is as a person, as a human being.
For other people that perhaps don't have a child with a disability in their life, who are walking into the school grounds or chatting to somebody in the office who have a child with a disability, what can they do to make you feel seen, or how can they make things feel like you're valued? What sort of conversations can people start, or what are the things that they can say, you know, rather than to make you feel pitied?
That's a really good question, and kind of a hard one to answer because it has changed and fluctuated for me over time. It used to grate on me when people would say, oh, but he's so lovely and is so beautiful, because at that time when it was very new for me, I wanted people to validate the struggle that I was going through. I wanted people to say, that must be really hard for you. That must be really challenging, as opposed to, let's cover it up and smooth it over. There's so much to be happy about. That I didn't want to hear that then. But I actually enjoy hearing that now, now that I've processed that grief of the knowing that things will be different with this child. I now love it when people say, oh man, like he's come so far ahead. Like, look at how well he's doing, because I'm no longer in a place where I need to validate that there's a reason for what's happening here. So when people were saying, oh, he's doing so well, this is when I was like implementing all of these therapies and it was hard yakka. And I was like, you know, appointment on top of appointment on top of appointment. And it felt like a lot for me. And so for someone to say, but he's doing so well, that felt kind of like it was minimizing it, because I'd be like, but it doesn't feel like he's doing well. And I guess that's where the imposter syndrome came in a little bit, because I was like, well, if everyone's saying he's so okay and he's so fine, why am I doing all of this hard work? Like, why is it so
hard? Am I making this up?
Am I making some, you know, when I'm complaining about how many therapies he's got and someone's going, but he's so great, am I coming across looking like I'm making a big deal out of nothing?
Yeah, it's okay.
And I know that wasn't the intention behind what was being said, but that's how I processed it.
Because people sugarcoat, there's obviously a lot of, there is pity. People feel sorry for you. They probably have a moment where they go, oh, wow, like that poor woman.
Whereas I find what helps, he goes to a special school where there's a lot of other mums with like kids with an absolute huge range of different challenges and diagnoses, disabilities and things. I find the common theme for what works with all of us is picking out and identifying the thing that is the best about that kid.
Yeah.
Because everyone likes to be complimented about their child.
Yes.
And so if I can say to someone, gosh, she's got a beautiful smile, or like the things that really get to me is when I'm dropping off Austin at school and the school mums are like, I love seeing Emmett because he's got such a beautiful smile and look at his curls and he's getting so tall, and just things about him that I can't control that are lovable and lovely.
And they're humanizing him.
Yeah, they're humanizing him. And
they're not pointing out his points of difference. They're reflecting his elements of him that are gorgeous.
There's one little girl at the special school who's got something called SMA. It's a muscular issue. And up until recently, they've started doing gene therapy, but it used to be a death sentence. They wouldn't live to 12 months. This little, beautiful little girl's 18 months and she's had gene therapy. So she's on the leading cusp of kids who are now living through this and living longer lives. But she obviously doesn't walk, doesn't talk, but she has these like cheeky little ways of communicating. And when I point that out to her mum and I'm like, the way that she's looking at me right now, and if you can tease out the parts of their personality, identify the thing about a child that is them, right? Their personality, who they are as a human being, you know, like the things that you can, like you said, that are life affirming for the person. And so that you can say to the mum, I see your child as you see your child. I see those things that you love about your child. And I think they're pretty cool too.
Yeah. And it is funny how it's really evolved for you.
Yes, absolutely.
12 months on for you, how would you say your week looks? Like how does your family function and what has changed for you? Because this time 12 months ago when we were first sort of talking about Emmett, you were kind of grieving. You were reaching out and just sort of getting acceptance from people and putting your story out there. And now it's actually an everyday part of your life. It's something you just get up and you tackle. What does your week look like?
We've worked out quite a good routine, although you know, as soon as you lock in a routine that works, then something gets changed up, right? Yeah. So for us,
throw a few spanners in the works.
Yeah. So that was this week for you and I was trying to work around the changing schedule for Emmett, which I had just gotten into.
Because I feel like my life even actually functions around Emmett's therapies. There's days that I can go walking at the beach with my friends, or because I know little M dog's got his special school morning tea, or you know, it's actually, you know, it affects your whole community.
Yeah.
But you know, your life is very busy, and you know, there are are people out there who might have a child, for example, having braces. And yes, that affects you because every couple of months they've got to go and go to the orthodontist and, you know, get the wires twisted and get a checkup. Or if they pop the odd wire, you've got to go back. This is not a 3-month thing for you. This is a weekly commitment for you.
Yeah. You and I are both the kind of people who will fill up our plates, and we actually function better that way.
Mm.
There's a great saying that I love that says, if you want to get something done, ask a busy person, because they'll slot it into their schedule, and it almost kind of is
100%
works better that way. And so I feel like this has just, my husband and I have always lived this way. If we ever have free time, we fill it with something. We'll always overcommit, but that's kind of just how we function. And I feel like this is just another thing on the pile, and we can work it out. And yes, some things have absolutely had to give, but in the same sense that has opened up, even in our business and our direction and our purpose, you and I, that has even kind of helped shape that in a way that I think in the long term might be a positive thing.
Of course. Yeah. Do you still cry?
That's a good question.
Because, okay, just to fill everybody in, you actually don't have a prognosis yet. And initially that was really difficult, because if they had have said, Emmett has autism, this is what we're going to do, you would go, okay, here's my plan. Currently, they've said to you, there's a lot of possibilities, but he's still developing, and there's a lot of traits that he won't develop until he's a little bit older. And we can't identify certain things until he's older. You have gone down the rabbit trap of Google, typing in every single type of syndrome, putting in all of the things that he does have, and then seeing where that on that particular day where Google spits you out into what direction. And then you've sort of sat and processed and sat with the fact that he might have a whole heap of syndromes. It also could be something muscular. It could be something, you know, from his genes. There are so many things that you have had to cope with. And I remember a moment when you realized that some of his actions and some of his behavior were pointing quite positively at that time to autism.
Mm-hmm.
And you just grieved. You'd been functioning so, so well. And then you kind of just, it hit you like a ton of bricks. And that was a little while ago. Since then, have you had moments where you do still cry and grieve?
It is a good question. I think I'm in a limbo phase at the moment, because we have, so he, we got, he got approved to have Medicare funded genetic testing, which tests about 7,000 genes that they're currently aware of that can be attributed to having this global developmental delay. Now, you can only get this gene test if you rule out a lot of other, if you have gone through a lot of other, like all of the other tests basically, and ruled everything else out, and you still don't have an answer. And then you can apply to have this government funded. And the reason I say that is because it's three tests. It's a test for him. It's all, I get tested and my husband gets tested, and they compare all three DNA profiles to find out what's different about him. And each of those three tests, each one costs about $5,500.
Wow.
So the government will only fund it once in a lifetime. And you need to tick all the boxes to say that nothing else has happened. Now, they do that test, and the results come back, and there's a 30 to 50% chance that that will come up with a hit, that there'll be a hit rate. And there's a lower percentage if there's no obvious dysmorphic features or other syndromic characteristics about the person. He doesn't have any of that. He's otherwise, he looks and functions normally outside of this delayed development. So he's got quite a low hit rate for it to come back with anything.
Mm.
But I really am clinging on to that because what I don't want is to have all of this be for nothing, for no purpose, for no reason. I think the worst thing for me would be to say, yeah, he can't walk and he can't talk. There's no reason. He just can't.
Mm.
And even though we know that there is a reason there somewhere, there's a cause, not knowing what that is really puts me in the whole, there's no purpose for this.
I think also because you can't help him. If they identify something, you can, the way I believe that you action things is, okay, great. This is how we're going to cope. This is what we need to do. This is what he needs. Part of life. Let's do it. But if you don't get that diagnosis, it's like, ah, now what?
Yeah. And I think just being able to accept, like, if he can't walk or if he never talks, to go, there's a reason. There's a reason for that. His chromosomes are different. And it's not just like, come on, talk. Like, why can't you? Let's, what else can we do? How can we make this happen?
Yeah.
Like, I think being, it would give me a level of acceptance that I don't have right now. I think the grief was coming a lot from like what that would mean for him in his life and whether he could make friends and whether he could find love and whether he could live in a world that I don't think really quite accepts differences the way that we could potentially. How has that process been for you as somebody who's been thrown in the deep end of having to be a support system for someone who's going through this?
I remember you asked me this question last year, and I have definitely had a lot more conversations with a lot more people in my everyday life. Maybe because once upon a time I would skip over, you know, them testing the water, you know, that their child might be different or that their child has a disability, where normally I might have been polite and went, oh, okay. I think I've been able to say, okay, you know, anything you want to talk about, or, you know, and it's funny, once you do ask that question, Pandora's box opens and everybody wants to tell you about their child, because it's not that it's a poor me, it's not a competing against who's going through the most. That is their life. It's a big part of somebody's life that they normally put a bit of a vault on and lock the door. And if you are able to jiggle that knob a little bit and get them to open, it's really quite beautiful to see that people do want to talk. So that's been a big thing for me, is that there's definitely been an understanding. My children, absolutely. My entire family absolutely adore Emmett. You and I go on holidays every year with our families and they spend a bit of time together. And I really see that they're, and it's a beautiful thing. I don't think my children were ever arseholes, but I think because they're very protective of Emmett, they are a lot more open to other kids with disabilities perhaps, and maybe being a little bit more nicer or looking out for other children. My two oldest girls actually volunteer. They have a side school, which is purely for autistic children, and they both volunteer each week. I think loving Emmett has made them want to meet more people with disabilities because they realize how big he makes their heart.
As someone who doesn't see him as often as I do, when you see him, does he come up, is he different? Does he look different or does he seem different?
As a baby, no. When he was first born, he was just a gorgeous baby. When he was little, he definitely, we talked about him having that beautiful baby face, the gummy smile. And lately I've been watching, you know, your videos or photos of him, because I haven't seen him for a couple of months. And it's definitely getting more visual, his point of difference. Because for a long, long time, he looked like a baby. And now he's got these long, 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 long legs, but there's sort of no muscle tone, you know. So he's sort of definitely not looking like, oh, just a little baby who's lazy and just chilling out in the pram. He's starting to look like these long limbs aren't being utilized.
And what about his facial features? Because I know he squints a lot. That's a stim of his. And he does these funny face things. And he still has his funny hand movements
and
stuff.
He's got little happy hands.
Yeah, which to me is so, I love. Yeah, it's so second nature to me. And so I don't associate that as a difference. I just see it as Emmett, right?
Yes.
But I don't know whether that, if you're a stranger seeing him for the first time or someone who doesn't see him quite as often, can you pick him in a room and go, that kid's different?
So he's still, and I hate to say this because it sounds very kind of elitist, but he's still like a really good looking kid. He has got beautiful, big, blue, juicy eyes. He's got the most cutest little gap in his tooth at the moment, and his hair is just growing and it's blonde and curly and it's just actually really cool. But so if you looked at him across the room and he was in his pram or something, no. But I have noticed there's definitely, I will never forget the time that you first rang me and said, I think he's having a fit. And you were filming him, and then you send it to a couple of doctor friends, and then you said, oh no, that's fine. So when he was little, those things didn't happen. But now, in just looking at him on the daily, yes, he is doing a lot more of those things. His stims, he's still drooling. So it does kind of, I guess, look odd for a child of his age still drooling. And I've noticed his attention span with his eyes is a lot less now. When he was little, I could hold and engage him and make him laugh and giggle, and he was sort of like very one-on-one with the eyes. And now I could call him three times, and even then he'll glance, then look away. So there's definitely, yeah, I feel, I wouldn't say it's regressing, but I felt that, and also probably because when he was 3, 4, 5 months, 6 months old, you know, you just went, he's a baby. So yeah, yes, I can definitely tell that he's different.
Interesting.
I just want to go back to the genetic testing. First of all, it's a very off random question, but when they test you, are you going to find out some things about yourself that you ordinarily would not have known, and now you're going to know and go, holy shit?
Probably, yeah. So they do say that even the basic genetic testing, when you're going into having kids, some people, for various reasons, will get genetic testing for themselves and their partner to see if they're, you know, of any potential problems. And they say that when you do those tests, don't be alarmed, because there will always be, I can't remember how many it is, but it's like 5 to 10 things that would make you never want to have children, because they'll go, well, you and your partner, you have like a 3% chance of having a child that will have this, you know, syndrome or that chromosomal abnormality. And so you see exactly how fucked up your genes are.
Whereas we can actually, without the test, you just live in a beautiful bliss of ignorance.
And I, yeah, so there are some, I have some neurodivergences, and so I'm interested to see if they will pop up, because some of those things are actually identifiable on chromosomal tests, but I don't know whether this test.
Interesting.
I don't know whether this test actually looks for those specific chromosomal abnormalities, but one of the neurodivergences that I have is, it is a hereditary thing. And interestingly, Austin has just started showing signs of having,
wow,
it's started to come out at the same time that mine did. So I'm finding that he's actually potentially inherited my
oh, great. And now that you've had the test,
brain issues.
Now that you've had the test, your husband can probably point all the finger to you of all the problems.
I know. He just keeps looking at both of our kids and he's like, what have you done to us genetically? Like, what? Who are you?
Oh,
and what have
beautiful.
You given to our children?
Hey, a question that I'm sure the listener is probably going, okay, but give me the answer. You had the genetic testing test, but you don't have the results.
23rd.
How long does it take? Well,
at the moment, there's a bit of a 6 month wait on it. So we got it done about six months ago, and we have an appointment on the 23rd to see the genetic specialist to see if to go over those results and see if there's anything that might pop up that could tell us what's going on with him. So at the end of this month is, hopefully we'll have a little bit of a direction that we can go down.
It's massive. It's a massive process, isn't it? Do you have any gut feelings? Like, are you, because, you know, you've had a long time, you've had a lot of therapy, you've been around people that you can kind of see things. Do you have a gut feeling of what you might, you know, take a stab in the dark, what you think might
as our pediatrician has said, he's a bit of a puzzle. Like, he's not typical of anything. He definitely shows some autistic features, and if he is diagnosed with autism, it will be it will be level 3, which is a significant level of autism. If it's not, then from a diagnostic point of view, they'll likely diagnose him with an intellectual impairment. What's happening with him is he is very, very slow to progress and to develop. However, as he is developing, it's all in line. So like at the point where he learns to bang things together with his hands, he's also learning how to pull himself up on a couch. So everything's moving together at the same rate. It's just very slow. So my hope is that he will, and yes, he does have differences along with that. He has a lot of major sensory issues. Then he has a lot of stimming, and he has a lot of differences, a lot of motor planning problems. So I think he will have challenges in his life. I'm hopeful that he will progress to a normal degree where he's not going to be like wheelchair bound, or he's not going to be taken advantage of, hopefully, in a situation where he has to be cared for in a home, like in a home somewhere.
Okay, so we're having treatments, we're having therapies. Some of your beautiful therapists have put you onto some really great things. So you've got a really groovy little wheelchair on its way, an amazing high chair, which you can slap him in the middle of the kitchen so he feels like he's more interactive. He's not just sitting on the floor, chasing flies. He can actually sit up there with you while you're cooking and feel like he's a part of your family interaction. So there's some exciting things that we've got on the horizon. Obviously, yeah, the results from the genetic testing will be huge. Where else are we at with little Emmett?
Just taking it a day at a time. I think I've finally come to the acceptance stage where it is what it is and I can't change it. And now we're just rolling with the punches. So, but as I keep saying, and I know I don't want to sound cliche, but we are so much luckier than so many other kids and other families. Like, he doesn't have cancer. He doesn't, he's not stuck in a household with abusive parents or anything. Like, we're really very, 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 very lucky. And for the fact that he can't walk or talk yet, I'll take that any day over so many other options that could be out there for him.
Well, I've always been very envious. From the moment he was born, he slept at least 12 hours a night and then about a 10-hour nap during the day. So a lot of shit done. And he just, yeah, he loves his little nap time and he loves getting in his little sleeping bag and snuggling up. So there are so many beautiful things about him as well. He gives the best cuddles. His little face lights up when anybody walks in the room. He's just pure joy.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, mate. And he's very lucky to have Auntie Sarah in his life because you play with him in a way that I just don't know how. So I think every time we meet up, he hits another couple of weeks in his milestones.
Yeah, we all actually went to Hamilton Island at the, it was actually a few months ago, but I swear nearly every single day. And it's like, get the phone. He's never done that before. I think just being around the big kids and just getting away too, away from all of the therapies. It's a lot, in any given day, he might have one or two sessions with a professional. And so I think sometimes those areas of growth come when you just take the foot off the accelerator and you relax, he relaxes. And it's quite amazing, but it's been beautiful to be there for some of those milestones. I remember the first time he actually went from his tummy to sitting up, and it was like Australia had won the hockey. The amount of cheering that was coming out of our apartment for that little guy was just absolutely incredible. And it was much more thrilling than my own children with some of their milestones, because you just know how tough that little guy's had it when he ticks something off the list. It's pretty bloody amazing.
Yeah, so true. So if you want to see the little face that we're talking about, you can see it through our Instagram at the.work.wives. You can also see it on mine at underscore joanna.kate. But most of the stuff that I have with Emmett, I pair it to the work wives. So you'll be able to see it there and any updates. And once we do get a diagnosis, oh well, once we do have an update from the 23rd of February, we'll jump back on and quickly update you on that as well. Hopefully we have some answers.
Amazing. And thank you to everybody. If you have any questions, Anna is an open book. You can always jump in our inbox and ask a question. You never know. Asking the question and her sharing it might always help somebody. And from the very beginning, when he got diagnosed, you said that you wanted to be open, you wanted to be honest, because if you could just help one person, it would be worthwhile going public and speaking about what's going on behind your family doors, which a lot of people do keep closed in these situations. So on behalf of everybody else, thank you for opening up those doors and sharing it.
Oh, you're welcome. A lot of time, like literally, as we're sitting here talking about it, I'm thinking like, oh God, how self-indulgent. I'm just talking about myself and nobody really care. Like, no one cares what's going on in my life. But we have been hearing feedback that people appreciate just listening, I guess, hearing somebody else's perspective and from both of us as well.
And normalizing how it feels.
Yeah, true, true, true.
Okay, so we're going to wrap it up. What is currently setting your soul on fire, Anna Banana?
Good question. I think it was just getting, because these days are so hot, a lot of times we're cooped up inside with the aircon on and we're not really getting out in the day. But yesterday afternoon was actually, there was this breeze at my house that was a Beautiful cool breeze. I don't know whether you had it where you are, but oh.
I felt it. I said to the kids, can anybody feel that? And they're like, what? And I went, fresh air. It's been so humid. There hasn't been a breeze. There hasn't been that fresh air feeling.
Yeah, so I have just bought an amazing, can't speak highly of it enough, oversized picnic rug. This is obviously not a paid collaboration.
Did you add that to the credit card when you just went out and got a whole new wardrobe the other day? I owed money back. What else have you bought lately?
No, this one I got a while ago because we have an old picnic rug. But you know, after a time, they have so much water on them and they get mud and then they get mold because you leave them out in the rain for 15 days at a
Yeah, some
time.
kid spills their lemonade
Yes,
and gets a bit
yes.
moldy. Yeah,
So I
gross,
got
gross.
this. It's like 3 meter by 3 meter, huge.
Ooh, good
Yeah,
size. Huge.
picnic rug from Picnic Season. And it's an Australian brand, and they have these Australian artists who have done who the their paintings are on these rugs. They're
Oh.
incredible. And the first day I got it, I'm out there on it with the kids, and then of course I spilt my drink on it. Do you know what happened? It all just turned the water turned into bubbles and sat on
Bubbles.
top of the rug.
Waterproof.
It
Yeah.
was waterproof. I was like, yes. Money well spent. So I went and got the big picnic rug out yesterday, sat on the lawn in the afternoon shade with this beautiful breeze ripping through Emmett's curls and just breathed it
Oh.
in, sat outside and went, oh, a bit of outdoor time. When you're feeling cooped up or just need a change, going outside on a beautiful day with a breeze is literally like a breath of fresh air.
Oh, bless.
Yeah. What about you? What's setting your soul on fire?
My puppy. Everyone knows I had got a border collie. He's only 7 months and he looks like he's about three. And he's just divine. I think I've become his person. Every morning he's not allowed in the bedroom, but he does come in and jump on the bed at about 4:45 every morning and just cuddles me and just does cute things. And I think because it's so hot at the moment, he's a bit sleepy and more affectionate. And I'm just falling more in love with him every day. And everywhere we go, he just goes up to people. He's so friendly. He loves other dogs. He makes people smile, and he literally has this gummy little smile on his face all the time. And I looked at him before we do this podcast, and I just looked at him, and my heart just went, oh, you are just a welcome addition. You're a good egg. You're a good kid, and you make me happy.
Oh, that's good. He is a good egg.
All right, we'll be back. We'll be back on Tuesday with Dr. Gina Cleo. We've talked it up. She's amazing. She's my new best friend. She's life goals. She's so inspiring, and we can't wait to share our chat with her.
Yes. Until then, have an amazing weekend. Keep cool. Sarah, have an amazing weekend, mate.
Thank you, my friend. You too. Goodbye.
Bye bye.
Workwives want to create a podcast for you, the brilliant, beautiful, talented, and tired working woman. We want to create content that will help you, inspire you, and set your soul on fire. So, how can you help us to help you?
Well, firstly, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it to be notified when we release upcoming episodes. It really helps the podcast gods to take notice and pick up what we're putting down for them, so it would really mean a lot to us.
Secondly, follow along on our Instagram at the.work.wives, where we can answer your questions and get to know you. We'd love to learn from you, listen to your stories, and hear about women who you think we should also bring onto the show.
And lastly, share this podcast with the women in your life and put the word out to work wives everywhere. The water cooler is open and we're ready for a global chat. Together with you, let's divide, conquer, and thrive. I'm Anna.
And I'm Sarah, and we'll see you next time.
Workwives Podcast acknowledges the traditional owners of country throughout Australia, and we recognise the continuing connection to lands, waters, and community. We pay our respects to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and to elders, past, present, and emerging.